This is April the 2nd, 2007, with Marilyn Mole from the Athabasca Archives in conversation with Mr. Roy Bergeron from Edmonton. Mr. Bergeron, if you would tell us where you were born, and we'll start from there.
My name is Roy Bergeron. I was born in Athabasca, July
19, 1929.
Actually, I couldn't believe they were teenagers. I was 6 years old, and they were teenagers. But to me, they were all
Teresa Genereux.
But they were just kids themselves, really.
You want to tell us about the doctor who was
with a big saw and cut big blocks of ice, drag it home, so mother could have an ice block.
And then the doctor came to town later on in years.
And in order to keep the
maybe you would tell us about your grandfather, his name and his wife's name.
It was sawdust. We had lots of that.
The first night I came
from the sawing,
aware of grandfather, he had ice always seemed to be very old to me. We were all so young.
And mother had always
My grandfather comes from
made a little
Warwick, Quebec.
In the veranda outside the kitchen.
He was born
door.
There in 1861, I think it was
left,
January.
All there, a little shed.
And his
a little door.
Wife was Sophie Ledger.
And she opened up his little door and there was
and
ice,
she was
ice blocks in there.
She was born in Attenvale, about 10 miles away from there in Quebec.
It's still there.
That was in 1861.
Yes, I should read that.
And then they,
and
for some reason, there was a shortage of food
in the yard.
Seemed like everybody moved towards Massachusetts, where he'd worked in the mills. Cotton mills.
Mr. Dantron promised them they would cut the trees down.
And that's where they met.
They were to stay.
And
forever.
My grandfather and grandmother are married there in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
But they started taking up too much room. They were really great.
And they had
two children there.
Later, Grandpa always wanted to travel.
He didn't stay there too long.
So he decided to take those two children
there.
And his wife, my grandmother,
they sold the place
to
North Dakota,
of all places.
No, and he settled it. I don't mean my place.
We
still had our share.
North Dakota.
We still lived there.
And right beside
the building,
even when Mr. Demchuk moved in,
where the 6th Cavalry was.
And in the back, we had a garage for the
we signed the huge
car.
Indian Reserve
upstairs,
there.
And
Grandpa
somebody got the idea to buy a cow.
A way to make a few dollars,
so
I imagine.
So
set up a store.
And you got the car
we
in the garage.
The
army and the partition.
He was in between the fire and water.
Somebody had to milk not me. I never milked a cow in my life.
But Grandpa was fearless.
He was only 5 foot two, but cow.
He was a really great man. I really loved him very much.
There is where I slept.
Yes,
and that's
and
where
there,
I first there,
there was a door in the end
eight
of the
more
place
children
where you used to deliver the hay.
They had eight children,
and
in,
that door
in
also opened the other way.
Camp Roulette, North Dakota.
It was a very far drop.
And my bed was
I got
there,
all the dates
and me
in Athabasca, and I promised to bring that back
to the hayloft.
And they're all documented.
And as soon as we were gone.
My grandfather's
where did you go?
Children, my uncle's
curfew. Wow.
And I have all the birthdays.
They wanted to see the town. They've never seen it.
They've been there forever.
After 8:30, it's
curfew. From there he moved to Washington State.
Curfew given by your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed there, and all of them had,
had
two more children.
Two more
together. He set up another store in Washington State.
We never
because
ever
of
said anything about
the abundance of fruit, you know.
And
at that time,
we were
almost get it for nothing.
Why are you?
Because the price of fruit at that time was very, very low.
My boys wouldn't do that. There must be some mistake.
And from there, they decided to.
Is that right, Roy?
I think they had enough of USA for some reason. Besides, there was another. They took advantage of the homesteading.
My mother didn't like punishment.
So they decided to homestead.
She was very soft.
Up in Athabasca.
And she sang in the choir
along with
that. Up on the balcony in the choir. I remember that really well.
Because he brought his extra children with him from
Okay.
From Washington. And this didn't seem to fuck with the kids.
I don't mean
and there he moved maybe to take a piece of the pie.
East of Athabasca
Road, he started farming.
We had three quarters of land.
Mother would say, go cut me a switch.
I have some photos of that. I said, why would I cut you a switch? You would switch me with it? Why would I cut you a switch?
And we went to see it. It was very interesting.
The building is still there.
And the hinges on the building,
but you get hungry.
Himself, because he's also a blacksmith.
Sometimes you get hungry, and then I'll
and he made these hinges for the big door.
She never did anything. She go like this.
And it's incredible, the way, you know, the way
your legs a little bit, that would be it.
Set up,
and you tend to cry so at the end of it.
He didn't have a place to live when he moved up there. They had the first, the I think it was... I don't know.
They had it first. She would never switch.
I think it was one quarter section.
But she never smacked it down.
But he had to clear it all. So he had some
so
of his sons
there. So your
dad
had that business, and in 1936.
And they lived.
He sold part of it then to Mike Demchak.
Out a cave in the hillside.
No, rented it too.
Where they actually lived. While he built here, the farmhouses.
Like, you know, from Europe with nothing.
That's
the toughest thing to do.
I probably landed in Montreal like that with
the Orioles, knowing all the animals and things whatever they have up there, you know.
They came to
to Athabasca.
And from that time,
grandfather
he started
had
built the house.
Well, because, of course, then he moved out of that.
It was grandfather.
Out of the cave,
A cave, it was actually.
Taught my dad. All
and they built all the farmhouses.
And helped to finance the building.
Yes. But he wasn't successfully farmed this place. But he wasn't rich. Mm-hmm. And they cleared it all.
Without grandfather.
Chainsaws.
You know, Mr. Mike Hampton saw.
Right.
Axon
hard work.
The hard way.
But he
now, your father did not come with him from North
Eventually,
Dakota.
No, he did not.
And then your father's name was?
Started taking
was,
over.
Was Horace.
And he didn't.
I believe he came, and we started selling off property.
I think it was
four or five years later.
The lot was ours. Mm-hmm. We had to sell lots of.
I'm not sure the date, but it's documented
in the meantime,
somewhere in the
lot. It's not hard to find that date. Easy because he did not have to be
grandpa
on rental property.
Mm-hmm. And he came to Athabasca
ownership property. Mm-hmm. So we were
I think he was a farmer at heart. What did he learn when
so
he was in Quebec?
I did.
Because they were all farming
he was
there.
To sell everything.
And he was 20 years old when he left Quebec.
And then
so
Mr.
Demchak
was buying a bit by bit
back.
Then.
He'd buy piece by piece.
Right.
So he put that to work.
Because from his...
And he had a good
foresight.
He decided
from secondhand clothing
when his son
and
my
second
dad come up
second this
North
or second
from
that
and the
hands on yourself or maybe pennies
would
more.
Build the shop.
We weren't talking about dollars and the pennies.
Of course, Dad was not married then.
Profit was sometimes
so together they built the shop
life that we
yes.
see in the photos here now,
which is now called Mike's Store,
on
Strathcona or 50th Street in Athabasca.
So Mr. Demchak was very smart.
Was Main Street,
right?
And
he learned how to become
the only thing I.
He was like some people would come over here and keep the same old ways.
No, he became Canadian really and learned our customs and that.
Well, your dad and his father built a shop.
And the downfall
and
grandpa was the finances
because they didn't have
because they were
coming up from North Dakota.
They let people go because there was no point in repossessing
much
the property.
Left. They couldn't
the
sell
place.
It. It was useless.
Yeah. And I think
except on the Main Street,
a part of grandpa's business.
But
grandpa left the U.S.
But we didn't know he
wanted all the kids
to come. Mm. But Dad bought.
And before you
so
know
he stayed
it,
around
he
the store for a while.
He didn't want to go to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted
from
to stay.
Probably had more interests there.
And so
when he did come up here,
Jim then acquired, he saved money.
They built a business, was still called.
And he had a family
store.
Care of, you know,
but it opened up as a secondhand store.
And he didn't have a real job
at that time. That I know.
Start.
He went and done
something else. Your dad ran a secondhand store.
He might have a sideline.
Mike,
believe it was secondhand.
But you're talking about your dad's business, what he ran in that store.
We made sashen doors,
which is windows and doors.
I left and got the millwork.
I went to see my brother-in-law in Edmonton.
What year would that be?
He had it in 1934. Redo these old axles from the cars because they're all wore out.
My brother-in-law said I could get a better education.
I'm talking about cars. Not the cars of the day, but the older cars. So I moved away.
And he wanted to turn them on a lathe.
It was 5 years
to make them smooth.
I never said put them back in the Athabasca
years.
And that's so
Grandpa
invented a automatic lathe that returned by itself.
20 years old.
And there was gear shifted from the school machine downstairs. So, and there's a shaft going across the side of the machine. And there was a gear shift. And the hole in the floor, you pick up this hole and stick the gear shift in the hole
and shift gears on this.
You couldn't hold me back.
The belt that runs the
machine in the
So he was doing machining as well as the millworking.
Oh, yes.
That was the only one there was.
It was good that
two beer said was stupid either,
He was smart, too.
They were actually big.
He would invent two beers. And he was
Mickey McKenzie was the
very well the waiter
by me
at the time.
Actually, I don't know the McKenzie family.
Your dad or your grandfather?
Big bunch.
Your grandfather,
kids.
Yeah.
One time, Mr. McLeod had a little hardware store next door to us.
Yes.
And Dad says,
I think his name was Bill McLeod.
I says, 21.
There was an Alex McLeod, too.
There were two of them. Yeah. So I had
they had a beer.
Sawmill.
At the age of 20.
One at Smith, Alberta.
Yeah. But I didn't have beer before that.
And the hardware.
Because I had a regular job.
One day when I came back from the
lumber mill,
after I went broke. Mm-hmm. And Mr. McLeod came and asked for one of the boys to help in the mill.
But Mr. Babcom had a contract.
Except me. And so he says, I want
lumber from Smith over here.
And Dad to Edmonton.
And
Grandpa says,
we're very good friends.
Right, look at him.
And one day he was in the Eagan Royal Cafe with his lady friend.
Dad decided it would be okay if I go.
And he asked me.
So little did I know
my babysitting.
Because I'd never been across the street.
Kids. Why are they going to do it
now? Well, I went to the fuel station. Anything.
So I went to this mill in
what's in
Smith,
me?
Alberta. And my job was to...
I really didn't really do it for money. But
they had a carriage that would cut.
I don't... They were making
the
number
name.
Of the logs. And they had
a
carriage.
But I didn't want to mention the name.
Okay, that's
first
piece of the
log. And then flip it over. And that piece of... Of slab was useless then at the time.
Not that changed my life.
Then they were burning. And that was my job.
And
to keep that
it's from
burning.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I can't
after
even
day,
tell
after it day.
Such a,
The house.
It was outstanding.
How much do you think I was making?
You can see it from everywhere.
Since
if you look up East Hillock,
that's all the house up there.
And they have a name for us.
How did you spell his name, Com?
Consensus.
C-O-M.
Oh, okay.
1941. I have no idea where he went.
I was 12 years old.
Because when I went away, and
the contract was for 30 days.
I should have kept in touch, you know. So at the end of that time, they had, I don't know why.
Well, you were young. You were just a
I had never
teenager
seen
when you went away.
Before.
You
know. It's all in $1 bills, I think. And so I had... On the way home, I had it in my hand so tight, you could hardly pull up the
part where I was sitting.
But it was all soaking wet.
It was...
I'm a musician.
I
always
was
in the shop.
I could play the harmonica.
And
that's
a 100-year-old boy.
Old.
My brother asked him, what?
You want for 15 cents?
$30.
Harmonica.
And I'm going to buy myself
a
little clothes
with that.
But first
he went
of all,
up to a dollar, and then now there's 60 cents.
You know,
something
you have to share with
the...
Oh, yeah, I know.
So we had to
and
share.
It was
babysitting.
Wait, we worked
up there at this little place.
It's not working well.
And he had two little boys, and they were... Like,
so I had to get $15 toward
and then we get them to sleep.
Right.
And these
two would dance
all night. But I got permission from mom and dad.
So now I'm done
that. I was babysitting these two little boys. Well, this lady
and
worked.
My sister told me, my sister Teresa said, she should open up a bank account. That was pretty young.
Her husband was
16 at the time.
They were separated. He was in the Army.
Somehow she arranged and me to have a
money
bank account.
That got from there.
Had that little bank to keep up the hill where I had her, it was called.
So the Bank of Commerce.
It became
a great friend.
I mean, it was inside the telegraph office. That it was
and me.
Owned by Asher Curl.
I became brothers.
Something else. And I put $8 in there.
Helped
and
to grow
I had
up.
Seven left. To do as I please.
I just went nuts. And I would crack this.
So I
they had a gramophone and a little dance floor. Store. And they would dance.
It was
dance,
a general store.
They brought beer home, you see.
And I bought
and
a beer.
They put it on a little tiny coffee table.
I had $7.
And they'd take, leave their beer there and go to the
desk.
While they were doing that, I'd take a sip of beer, you see. A belt. I had never had a belt. I had these suspenders all the time, you know.
Oh,
and I
wanted
to throw my pants. But just...
And they give me 25 cents sometimes,
even 50 cents.
I don't think we're allowed to have that.
And that was
a woman that found out.
A lot of money. You could buy a lot.
With $7, I had bought socks, a pair of boots.
You could buy a shirt,
a pair of jeans, a couple of shirts, a couple of silly things.
I saw them
and they left over.
I just went on for most of
the time. So when I came home with all this stuff, I had to put that in another bag.
You were about 15.
In a shop.
Yeah.
And there were these little tin cans with their names on it.
Oh, I was 14.
Alex,
14.
Frank, George, and so on.
So,
with our names on.
I
remember this just
took
money.
Took the beer out of your bottle, you see.
And
he
and you'd say once in a while, how much have I got my bank, Dad? And he'd look at her and he'd say,
because we'd get very out of trouble.
$2 or something. Oh, that's nice.
So, one night I went home and I think I was
buying groceries.
I might have been a little bit high on beer.
So that was really a great experience.
Like that, you know. And it was strange.
And coming back from the camp, there was a gentleman who had a contract from that place to Edmonton. His name was Dan Klein. He was a giant of a man.
You see, how
he was such a wonderful guy. And I just
get away with it.
I just took him
I said, good night,
he was my dad or my brother.
And he kissed me good night.
Oh, became pretty good friends. And he gave me a ride.
Do I smell beer on you?
Old Ford truck.
Oh,
up to Edmonton.
Is it up there?
And we had something to do.
Called the pig and whistle
babysitting.
Actually, it was a party.
And back babysitting.
Not.
We didn't have to fix them
right
here. Back to
the
pig. They dropped me off in Alabama again. In the middle of the night, middle of the morning.
Don't ever let it happen again.
By this time,
your father
joined out.
And then you'll get
it. That was the end of your $7.
That was the end of that.
For sure. Could you go back to when your mom and dad were married?
Now I was warned.
In 1913?
She would have probably said something about it. Maybe not.
Because I don't think your dad built the store
at
right
home
away.
Kids.
No.
There must
so
have
many
done something else
table,
when he first
you know,
came up.
And
we probably
like I sat next to my mom and my sister Doris,
no,
next to me and Alex, and across with Frank and George, and a couple of girls.
I don't know much
about
Dad at the end and Raymond
there
at that time of their life.
And they were the working men in the shop.
It seems to me I just don't remember, or I never
and
did.
We're not allowed to smoke.
Because I have an idea that the store was probably
anyway,
built in the early 20s.
Time,
yes.
Do you have a date for it, by any
you know,
chance?
Sometimes in the old days, the guy would put
well,
a cigarette
I think it was
here. It was some silly thing.
Before Raymond was born.
Because
Raymond
I
was first born.
Got a cigarette from
Raymond
roll
was
up the hand, roll up cigarette.
Born in 1915,
and,
I think.
I put it on my ear and I forgot it.
In 1938,
and luckily it was 23 when he died.
My mother sat
in 1915.
Right.
My dad was seeing that.
Okay,
so
and they didn't have the store then?
And, yes.
Oh, they
I
did?
I said they wouldn't have to have the store
side
then.
Mom.
Okay.
They had no
she
had house.
And they would have lived in the store.
Attention.
That was the idea.
It goes like this, you know?
I don't think they planned on a great big family like that.
I felt the cigarette up there.
So in the back of the building, they built up quarters, you know.
You know,
there was a kitchen and a couple of bedrooms.
I was so ashamed.
And
one
and
of the strangest things
about my
ear
about
without
later on in years,
or
anybody
the same
anybody else seeing it,
one
yeah.
but
my
one cylinder engine that run everything.
I got away with that.
And that brought me that one of those big wooden washing machines that had a action on it. But
it was the end of smoking for me.
He opened up a hole in the wall.
Yeah, we had
beside the cupboard that came up to where mother's washing machine was.
It didn't hurt
and
not
put
to
a
smoke,
belt on it.
No, no.
And it run by sitting downstairs.
When I
and
was,
mother didn't have to scrub clothes.
When
she had a washing machine.
Was during school time.
Mm-hmm. All the wooden
and
parts,
there was
the wooden agitator,
the
you know, and there was a pump on it. That was taken away, and it was
and
actually run by.
It was at the machine downstairs.
It was in the fall.
And I missed
and mother
the
only had a certain time to wash.
That year.
I made to wash for 14
so
or 15
kids.
Up. But in the meantime,
well, we're all
while they were
the summer,
there,
no, I'm sorry, that's
she
not right.
Had certain
I had
time
not
to
started school
well, he
yet.
Wasn't using the machine,
that's
right.
Right. But it wouldn't run everything.
I was supposed to give you half.
We and there's a shaft running across
kindergarten, but just grade one.
Gear shifts here and there. It was
so during
incredible.
Quarantine,
how did
I was missing
how did
my
all
first
of you
part
manage to fit into that space?
But my brothers
I don't know.
And sisters taught me.
I do know that
to read,
my,
to write.
Really,
I don't know if
we were
really
poor
read.
Or not.
We were
and
probably
rich. In longhand,
wow. But dirt poor.
And I had not finished school
yet. We had
yet.
Two gardens. We had a garden next door to us on the. On the
south side
of the building, which was a vacant lot then, and they had a little book,
and that was mother's
starter book,
personal
and then we had two or three lots
it
to the
I don't remember the name,
the primary, the little red book,
west.
And there was a dog was involved.
The
university now. Was that
okay.
West?
Yes.
I never knew my directions here.
And
I did not ever know my directions, just up and down.
And so
the action was, you could see the children, and the action
I've lost track of
where I was.
Well, we were talking about how all the families fit in that building.
The actions of the kids.
It so happened
we had a garage at the back, because we had a big car. A 1927 Dodge Tourer.
My teacher was Miss Plumley.
And, we
and when I started in school,
in the dog,
she
too,
was
on the running board,
the olives and all that, you know.
And we have got grandpas.
This is going to be your Sunday
ritual
reader.
Go there and
learn to read.
And gorge yourself
later
great
on.
Food,
you know.
Not
grandma,
you know,
learn to read.
But I did know how to read it.
Each members.
And I had to be a show off, you know. For some reason,
well, we were crowded.
We wanted the attention
that we had. Big,
fantasized.
And so this little book, four of us boys stayed in one room.
You learn how to read everything in
and I
together in two beds, like two beds.
I didn't mean to say
so,
it.
That's why I got
a little
short.
And that's why I went away.
Can read that. We had straw mattress.
British teacher from
the
French
Alps.
Come over here to buy you mattress. Just get some new straw.
And she wanted to show us how you can read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the girls slept in another room with a partition
in the
there. And
I read this little book.
My sister stayed in that side of the house.
And then there
was
another person
over
there.
That was very small.
Grade.
And I left from
grade
1 to 3.
You see what the size
practice.
Of this class.
And there was something was when my sister
so they accelerated you.
I got scarlet fever. But I sister,
I can read that.
Nora,
in my mind,
we were all quarantined.
And I learned.
We had a great big high chance.
I like mathematics.
That nobody's allowed to jump over it.
But I learned
and
how to.
They have to bring us groceries, and they would put it beside
the short.
Just
in
like lepers,
you
know?
Cheating.
And we'd have to go pick up the
preparing yourself.
They had a basket of groceries.
I like to call it because
we had a grandpa sometimes dropped some stuff off over the fence.
But
you know,
how long did the quarantine
tree.
Last?
It was 40 days.
A total of 9.
Oh, that was a long time.
Numbers.
It was
one by one. We had to go up there
and I suppose they were afraid that it would spread from one child to the next.
Well, actually, it wasn't that bad as
we know
as she wrote them down.
It could have been
controlled
as it was.
By its
cleanliness and stuff,
mm-hmm.
That'd be a sex, okay, no big deal.
And my sister, her lip
turned
up, the next one,
really
had that, you know,
as she was at it.
And
now
it was one continuous fight.
Let's say it's yelling.
fighting for position, you know. And I also had, before the, I had my turn a few pigeons I got from my friend Harold Ashaker.
Okay.
And he had nice little pigeons.
Would you like to go up there?
He was raising just for fun.
Solve this additional
problem. I thought I would like to have one or two of those. Well, I want a married couple, you see. Make sure that they'll
be where more I had, pigeons. You know. I want to be, so he gave me a couple. I don't know
how he gave me probably a jawbreaker or something.
I wanted to be smart. I appeared to be smart.
So instead of banana crate time up on top of the shed, nailed it up there.
$10
I used that for a pigeon coop.
Okay.
And two went great. That's great. So it happened two or three times.
Yes.
And I guess she got suspicious. So
the pigeons.
I had a she probably around 40 or 50 out there. They just kept coming. Remember while we were watching
the
wild ones fly over and join. Because they knew there was a meat there, maybe a food.
A similar thing, you know.
So later on we ate these things. You
know, they got longer to do it.
And that ordered them.
Bluff.
Yeah. So I said,
well, how can you do that?
I had enough.
Raymond,
you
got a little 410 and he said,
you did.
Darn
yes.
And then we ate them. She says,
pigeon pie.
I thought you were going to kill me.
He said, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, at least I like it when my,
I guess when my uncles and aunts came to see, they all lived in the U.S.
I know about my year.
And every year they would come to visit us. And then we would have
Can
a go down
to everybody
was
doing
musical,
the walking tour book.
Instruments.
I really want to sort out
my mother
dates
played the piano, violin.
Your dad and your grandfather's
dad
store.
Dad played the
and Mr.
piano.
Demchuk going
that's
in
right.
in
that
1936.
Violin.
So he rented part Raymond. Of it in 1936. And
some people call him Ravis.
And
I
when did Mr. Oscar
Raymond.
Crawford start his fur buying business in that store? Do you know?
And he built his own guitar.
He had, apparently he had one side of it for a fur buying business.
Oh, yes.
In the store.
That was Raymond's shop.
Maybe it was originally, I don't know. Oscar Crawford is what we were told.
We had a gramophone, the old
he was along the south wall.
I'd crank and crank, and somebody had to stay cranking while I was listening to the music.
Where the furniture front was.
Okay.
Somebody had to stay there. And usually one of the smallest guy, or a girl,
I vaguely remember that.
Cranking this
but
thing
you don't remember
up.
That
but,
year.
But no, no.
So we had all the Wolf Cooper stuff, you know.
Okay.
And
so then there was the rest of the store. And then when your dad rented part of it out to Mr.
Demchuk,
your dad still had the back?
Beautiful stuff. He now
the living quarters?
Yeah, living quarters plus the front.
Well, where
Raymond would listen to this music,
and Mr. Jim
so he decided
the
to make
half.
A guitar.
And then your dad eventually moved.
The guitar and violin business.
Yeah, he moved.
Because Raymond made it by hand.
He carved it. He did everything.
He had a
Catholic church.
He got some Edmund probably somewhere.
It's about not even half a block.
And he made
down.
His guitar,
strung it, tore it down.
Mm-hmm. And there's
and he could
a
sing.
There's way down like that.
Just wonderful.
And there's some
like
there.
George.
And George the house still stands.
I think to this day I'm not sure.
Well, really
okay.
Was
and then his shop was
the shop was there.
By the house.
Yes. One
the
time I said to
and that was Prima about 19
would stand and play music for mother on the guitar and sing songs. And he could yodel like Wolf Carter.
Maybe
so,
you know, so Mr. Demchuk gradually sort of
bought out beautiful.
The one business, the sash and door business. Well, not the business,
no,
the building.
The building.
And not your brothers.
Knew nothing about
no, but he bought out
true?
The building, and then your dad moved to another building and had the same business.
True, and another man moved into town, another contractor.
And what happened to your brother, Ray?
He came from Germany. Yeah.
What happened to him? Mr. Schinkinger?
He
who was the one who moved
drowned.
In? Do you remember the name?
In Fort
Ramsey.
At a young age.
At 23 years old.
And he moved into the store with Mr.
And
Demchuk?
No.
Okay.
No, he had his own place.
Okay.
So it was competition.
Oh, yes, for your dad's business.
She asked everything.
Yeah,
so
hard.
With that and taxes.
So he only made his instruments for a short
growing,
period of time then.
Pressure
to feed the
violins.
It didn't.
We didn't make any Stradivarius.
After 1938, we go back a couple of years, 1938 when
they sold a couple of them.
Raymond drowned.
But
everything
changed.
Raymond was that somehow.
It was terrible.
He. I was in the kitchen that day. Got into arguing with Dad in 1938 because he was
9 years old.
Disciplinarian. Beyond words, disciplined everybody. A telegram came. We'd soon be all starting to get attention. And Mother
opened
the back door.
We used to have a front door.
So
they came to the back.
Finally,
and they brought a telegram.
I think Dad said, either you do this or that, or you get out.
Telegram.
Saying that so Raymond had whatever he had,
drowned.
He was gone. But if
it was sufficient,
he was dead.
Now
and Mother did not believe
the working men were gone.
She,
there weren't any of the smart enough to do what these two guys were doing.
She fell faint on the floor,
brave enough
with the telegram in her hand.
That they used to bring home
and
venison.
Her hair turned
venison.
And he married,
and then. They started.
So Raymond and Arthur, they had a contract to go up north to do some painting. This guy could do everything. They were hunters, fishermen.
And they were young, too. They were still pretty young.
They were teenagers. Young. Actually, I couldn't believe they were teenagers. I was 6 years old, and they were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, they were always men.
Sure.
But they were just kids themselves, really. They would go down to the river and with a big saw and cut big blocks of ice, drag it home so Mother could have an ice box.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to keep the ice from freezing, they covered it with sawdust. We had lots of that. From the machinery,
right.
From the sawing of it, we had plenty of sawing. So we had ice all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother had always a fresh little, Dad made a little place in the veranda outside of the kitchen door. To the left, there was a wall there, a little shed, and a little door. And she'd open up this little door, and there was ice, big ice blocks in there. She kept meat and stuff in there.
Oh.
It's still there. To this day.
Is it?
Yes. I showed it to Rita.
Hmm.
And we had two huge spruce trees in the yard. They were very, very, very tall. And apparently when the place was sold, Mr. Demchak promised to never cut the trees down.
Mm-hmm.
They were to stay forever. But they started taking up too much room. They were really great. And when they left, see, now I don't live there after that, you see. When they sold the place, I was not there. When they sold the place.
Well, they sold it in 1936.
No, but I don't mean my place.
Oh, okay.
Not, so we still had our share. We still lived in the other half of the place, the building.
Even when Mr. Demchak moved in?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in the back, we had a garage for the beautiful big Dodge car. And upstairs, and somebody got the idea to buy a cow. So Dad bought a cow. And he had the car in the garage, and then they built a partition, and this is where this cow was, you see. And somebody had to milk, not me, I never milked a cow in my life. But Raymond used to milk the cow all the time. And naturally, they had to have a hayloft. So there is where I slept. And that's where I got my first freedom, you see. Because there was a door in the end of the place where he used to deliver the hay.
Right.
But that door also opens the other way. And it wasn't a very far drop. And my bed was up there, and me and Alex stayed up there in the hayloft. And as soon as lights out, we were gone.
Where did you go?
We had a 8:30 curfew. Well, we wanted to see the town. We'd never seen the nighttime before.
Oh.
After 8:30 is curfew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for...
The curfew given by your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A 10-year-old. Well, I don't know what a person would do now at 8:30 curfew. But we didn't seem it was that bad. But we broke all the time, Alec and I.
Both.
We never, ever said anything about it until we were caught. And we were accused. And Dad had us up there standing at attention. And what did you do? And Mother says, my boys wouldn't do that. There must be some mistake. My boy, is that right, Roy? Yes, Mom, that's right. My mother didn't like punishment, you know. She was very soft-hearted, so wonderful. And she sang in the choir along with Dad, up on the balcony in the choir. I remember that real well because I was an altar boy at the time. And if we were naughty, I don't mean bad things, but naughty, maybe take a piece of the pie that's supposed to be for supper and we want to be short later on or something like that, you know. And Mother would say, go cut me a switch. I'd say, why would I cut you a switch? You're going to switch me with it? Why would I cut you a switch? And she went at me. I'd say, well, you know, I won't cut a switch and you won't catch me, but you'll get hungry. Sometime you'll get hungry and then I'll be there. She never did anything. She'd go like this, you know, and sting your legs a little bit, and that would be it. And you pretend to cry, so at the end of it. The punishment came from the other half of it.
Mm-hmm.
The corporal punishment. Like Mother, he would never, Mother, she would never switch us. Well, he'd switch us, but she'd never smack us, you know.
So your dad had that business, and in 1936, he sold part of it then to Mike Demchak, or just rented?
No, rented it too.
He rented
because
it.
Because Mr. Demchak came here, like, you know, from Europe, mm-hmm. with nothing. Mm-hmm. They came with their steamship fare, and that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And probably landed in Montreal or New York. And they came to Athabasca. And Grandfather had a say in this as well, because it was Grandfather who taught my dad all these things.
And helped to finance the building originally, too.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't broke. But he wasn't rich.
Mm-hmm.
But without Grandpa, there'd be no Mr. Mike Demchak.
Mm-hmm.
But he was willing to share, and eventually, and the taxes started taking over. Delinquent taxes. And we started selling off property. The one next door, the empty lot, was ours.
Mm-hmm.
We had to sell lots of paper taxes. In the meantime, Mr. Demchak would have it pretty easy because he did not have to pay tax on rental property,
mm-hmm.
only on ownership property.
Mm-hmm.
So we were liable for all the taxes. So I think by bit, he was forced to sell everything.
Your dad?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Demchak was buying it bit by bit then.
He'd buy piece by piece.
Right.
Because he had a good foresight from secondhand clothing store, at secondhand this or secondhand that, anything he'd get his hands on, he'd sell for maybe pennies more.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't talking about dollars and... The pennies of profit was sometimes keep you alive.
Yes.
Well, you could feed a family for 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Demchak was very smart.
And he learned how to become, like he wasn't like some people would come over here and keep the same old ways. No, he became Canadian really and learned our customs and that. Mm-hmm. And that's why he was able to obtain the property. And the downfall was the taxes that were in arrears, because they were not charging these taxes.
They let people go because there was no point in repossessing the property.
They couldn't sell the property.
No.
It was useless.
Yeah.
And except on the main street, it was probably worth more. But they let the taxes go. But we didn't know they were building up.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you're at thousands in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
From pennies.
Right.
And so I think Mr. Jemison then acquired, he saved money, what he could.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a family to take care of, you know, he had to feed those too. And he didn't have a real job that I know of. He might have done something else. He might have had a sideline, but mostly I believe it was secondhand stuff. And that became a pretty nice store after that. When I left Athabasca, I went to stay with my brother-in-law in Edmonton.
What year would that be, Roy?
1944.
Okay.
And my brother-in-law said I could get a better education in Edmonton, so it was true. So I moved away. So from then, it was 5 years until I ever set foot back in Athabasca again.
Hmm.
I left in the summer of 44, and I came back when I was 20 years old. And so I went down to see Dad, and let's go for a beer, he says. I didn't drink, you know. But the idea of going into beer parlor, you couldn't hold me back. So we went into the old Grand Hotel downtown. Of course, that was the only one there was. And Dad says, two beers. And they were those little 10-cent ones, you know. But they were actually big, 6 ounce, I think. Two beers. And Mickey McKenzie was the waiter at the time. The McKenzie family had a big, big bunch of kids. And he was the waiter. He says, hey, he's not 21. And Dad says, how old are you, Roy? I says, 21. He's 21, he says, to McKenzie. Okay, so I had my first beer.
At the age of 20.
With him.
With your dad, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd had beer before that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a regular job when I came back from the lumber mill after I went broke.
Mm-hmm.
I did feel really broke. And Mr. Dan Com had a contract of hauling lumber from Smith over here to Edmonton. And we were very good friends. And one day he was in the Royal Cafe with his lady friend. And he asked me if I would mind babysitting this lady's kids while they went out to a dance. Well, I would love to. Anything. If there's a nickel in it. What's in it for me?
Yeah.
But I really didn't really do it for money with those people. They were wonderful. I don't remember the lady's name. I do read it, but I didn't want to mention her name here.
Okay, that's fine.
Because but they changed my life.
Mr. Plum.
Yes, and his friend. They had I can't even tell you where they lived because it's such the house. It was outstanding in Edmonton, Athabasca. You could see it from everywhere.
Mm.
If you looked up the East Hill, mm-hmm. little green house up there.
How did you spell his name, Com?
Just C-O-M.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea where he went, because when I went away, I should have kept in touch, you know, but I didn't. I don't know why.
Well, you were young. You were just a teenager when you went away.
True, yeah.
I've been a bit part.
Thank you. And
you talked about some Indian art.
But this babysitting mm-hmm. was wonderful. It was, I'm a musician. I was always musical. I could play the harmonica when I was 4 and a half years old. Oh. My brother Arthur bought me one for 15 cents. Harmonica, the marine band. Then they went up to $1, and then another 65, another 100 and something that I have now. And it was babysitting up there at this little place. And he had two little boys, and they were wild. Finally, we got them to sleep. And these two would dance all night. But I got permission from Mom and Dad that I was babysitting these two little boys while this lady worked. It was true. And I did a lot of, she would, her husband was, they were separated, and he was in the army. And the money that they got from there wasn't that much to keep two kids alive and herself, you know. So Dan, they became good, great friends, Dan and this lady. And me, I became something else. It's true.
Helped you grow up.
I just went nuts. And I would crack this. They had a gramophone and a little dance floor, and they would dance. They brought beer home, you see, and they'd put it on a little tiny coffee table, and they'd leave their beer there and go up and dance. And while they were doing that, I'd take a sip of beer, you see. Oh, it was so much fun. And they give me 25 cents sometimes, even 50 cents.
Wow.
And that was a lot of money. You could buy a lot. You could buy a shirt 50 cents. Mm-hmm. So this went on for most of the summer.
And you were about 15.
Yeah. I was 14.
Okay.
14. So I was sipping beer out of their bottle, you see. And they knew that. They would see me and they'd say, be careful because we can get in very big trouble. So one night I went home and I think I might have been a little bit high on beer. I might have drank half a bottle or something like that, you know. And it was a strange feeling. And mother, yeah, I'm walking the door, there's mother sitting at the table, and I'm trapped. I have to kiss her goodnight. Mm. You see, how am I going to do that? I get away with it. And so I said, goodnight, Mom. Aren't you going to kiss me goodnight? Oh, yeah. So I kiss her goodnight. Do I smell beer on you? I just sat up there at the party where I have babysitting. Actually, it was a party. Babysitting. I had spilt some beer on myself. It was an accident. And she goes, okay, this time I believe you, but don't ever let it happen again, or your father will find out, and then you'll be in trouble. So that was the end of that.
For sure.
Because I was chastised, and I was warned. Because she would have probably said something about it. Maybe not. And another thing at home was kids. There were so many of them at the table, you know. And like I sat next to my mom and my sister Doris next to me, and then Alex, and across was Frank and George, and some couple of girls, and Dad at the end, and Raymond, and Arthur beside him. And they were the working men in the shop.
And we weren't allowed to smoke. And we didn't want to smoke anyway. But this one time, you know how sometimes in the old days the guy would put his cigarette on his ear? It was some silly thing, wasn't it? Because I had got a cigarette from a roll-up, I had a roll-up cigarette, and I put it on my ear and I forgot it. And it, luckily it was on my right ear where my mother sat, and on my left ear he was, my dad would have seen that. And I sat down beside Mom, she had one of and trying to attract my attention. And she goes like this, you know. And then I felt the cigarette up there. You know, I was so ashamed, and I have to take this off my ear without crying or
anybody
else seeing it. And I put it in my pocket. I got away with that. But I got switched for it, too.
By your mom?
Yeah. But it was the last one I had. It was the end of smoking for me. Yeah, we had a lot of discipline in our place, but we also had lots of love.
And it didn't hurt not to smoke, did it?
No, no. See, when in the quarantine, was during school time, mm-hmm. and there was 40 days of missed school, and it was in the fall, and I missed the last part of school that year, so I had to catch up. But in the meantime, while we were there, no, I'm sorry, that's not right. I had not started school yet, but I was supposed to, we did not have kindergarten, but just grade one. Mm-hmm. So during quarantine, I was missing my first part of school. But my brothers and sisters taught me to read, to write, really, and really read, and really write in longhand.
Wow.
And I had not started school yet. So, and they had a little book, it was a starter book called, it was about I don't remember the name, the primary, it's a little red book, and there was a dog involved, a little boy and his sister, and they were little sentences, and the action was, you could see the children and the action. I did do it by memory. Mm-hmm. I would use it as association, the words with the actions of the kids on the pages. So I learned to read the book. And my teacher was Miss Plumley. And when I started school, she was introducing all of us and all that, you know. And this is going to be your primary reader, and we'll learn to read later on, you know, not grade one, you don't learn to read that. But I did know how to read it. And I had to be a show-off, you know, for some reason. I mean, I wanted the attention. And she said, this little book is going to make you learn how to read everything in the future. And I says, but I can already read that. I didn't mean to say it.
Mm-hmm. You were just a little boy.
I had to show off. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can read that. And she was a disciplinarian. See, she's a British teacher. I think she came from the British Isles. Come over here to teach. Mm-hmm. And she said, why don't you just show us how you can read? Up in front of the class, I read this little book. And that was my first honor grade, when I left from grade one to two to three, to Frank Faulkner's class.
So they accelerated. They accelerated you.
Yeah. But I never forgot that. I did read that book in my mind, and I learned. I liked mathematics, but I learned how to do it quicker and short. In it's not really cheating. Preparing yourself ahead of time, I like to call it. And they would get up, the teacher would put a column of three, a total of nine numbers on the board. And then they, one by one, we have to go up there and solve this, add this on the, it was an addition. And so, as she wrote them down, I memorized the first line. Okay, that'll be a six, okay, no big deal. And then she'd go with the next one, and I would add that up as she was at it. Now it's a five or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then let's say it's at the end, it'd be four numbers of these columns. And it was my turn to go up and, Roy, would you like to go up there and solve this additional problem? So I'll go up, but I want to be really ahead, you know. I was actually a show-off. And I wanted to be smart, and I appear to be smarter. So instead of taking a little more time, I went up and I'd put down the numbers I had up here. Well, that's great. That's great. So it happened two or three times. And I guess she got suspicious. Well, I wonder how you do this. So she put the number the night before, not while we were watching her, night before, and she covered them up. Then she called me up to do a similar thing, you know. It took me half an hour. It took a lot longer, you know, to do it.
Yeah. She called your bluff.
Yeah. So she says, well, how come you do it so quickly for? I said, well, actually, I added up as you went along. You did? I said, yeah. So that's marvelous, she says. I thought she was going to kill me. She said, it was quite well. It wasn't so bad. Mm-hmm. It wasn't cheating.
No.
A just quick way of getting it done. That's what I know about my early years in school.
Could I go back? Because we're going to be doing the walking tour book, I really
yes.
want to sort out dates for your dad and your grandfather's store and Mr. Demchuk going in 1936. So he rented part of it in 36. And
yep.
And when did Mr. Oscar Crawford start his fur buying business in that store? Do you know?
No.
He had one side of it for a fur buying business.
Oh, yes. Wasn't that Mr. Hingley?
Maybe it was originally, I don't know. Oscar Crawford is what we were told.
Okay.
And he was along the south wall.
Okay. Oh, yes, and where the furniture part was.
Okay.
Yes. I vaguely remember that.
But you don't remember that year.
But no, I would not even know his name.
Okay. And so then there was the rest of the store, and then when your dad rented part of it out to Mr. Demchuk, your dad still had the back? The living quarters?
Yeah, living quarters plus the front.
Well, one where half, was one half of the it. Front? And Mr. Demchuk had the other half.
Yeah.
And then your dad eventually moved.
Yeah, he moved to... By the Catholic Church. It's about not even half a block down towards town, and there's a road there that goes way down like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some bushes in there, and the house still stands. I think to this day, I'm not sure.
Okay, and then
the shop was there.
by the house,
yes,
beside the house. And that was about 19...
It'd have to be... maybe 40?
Okay. So Mr. Demchuk gradually sort of bought out the one business, the sash and door business. Well, yeah, not the business, but
no,
the building.
The building. Because he knew nothing about sash
and door.
No, but
he bought out the building, and then your dad moved to another building and had the same business.
Yeah, and another man moved into town, another contractor similar to us. He came from Germany.
Oh, Mr. Schinkinger?
No, he did the harn. He did.
Okay, who was the one who moved in then? Do you remember the name?
Well, I just know all. Oh, he used to sharpen skates.
Okay, and he moved into the store with Mr. Demchuk?
No,
okay.
No, he had his own place.
Okay,
so it was competition.
Oh yes, for your dad's business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So with that and taxes, and the growing pressure to feed family,
mm-hmm,
and after. Like in 1938, we'll go back a couple of years, 1938 when Raymond drowned, everything changed. It was terrible. But I was in the kitchen that day, in 1938, I was 9 years old. And a telegram came. And mother answered the back door. We didn't have a front door. It was a shop. So everything came to the back. And they brought a telegram. They brought a telegram saying that Raymond had drowned. And it was official. He was dead. And mother did not believe it, but she screeched, you know, I remember, and she fell faint on the floor with the telegram in her hand. And within the month, her hair turned white. And then they started...
Fur take. Darwin. Now, how do I get it up?
Still hurts. I never mentioned that the day Raymond died, we called it the day the telegram came.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom and Dad fighting. Whose fault it was?
Well, it was getting hard on their relationship.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
My firstborn.
Right.
I have a dividing among the two of them. I pull them apart.
Mm-hmm.
I have so handsome. Each one of them, him moving away.
Sure.
Mother, okay. I can on Raymond. Raymond's only about a teacher.
Okay.
He was accused of sex. And that was... It was very, you know. You will never learn. You never watched it. When I was only 9 years old. And I went along after that. And everybody I had. Oh, yeah, this was the last episode. He was at the church.
Into French.
Yeah, French. Language spoken in the house of Benham. Grandma, English in her whole life. She was such a darling. Go back in the town. After we saw the farm, Grandpa, I moved into the town and we decided where I wanted to go. Grandma, the one, stayed with 20 college, you know. Advice and stuff like that, you know. Wonderful guy. Wonderful.
People didn't speak French with you.
Huh?
Yeah, but I couldn't speak. He didn't speak French.
It was a really, really sad part. I was in the town. They weren't living in the town up on the hill. I was up there. Not really on the hill. Not on the hill. French. And then American. And Melbourne, USA.
So a different lifestyle altogether, different culture. In North Dakota, wasn't that much French?
No, but your father spoke it to his kids until the telegram came.
Until then?
Yeah.
And then all hell was.
Yeah.
So he would come in French and Dad would not answer in French. And that's why he jumped out of bed. I don't know what he was doing. He was a skirt chase.
Your dad?
Yeah. That's another story.
Yeah.
I won't dwell on that. It's
not that interesting. No.
But when he said there'd be no more French school, I'm not going to church anymore. Choir? And would allow Mother to sing in the choir? But Mother had a mind of her own. She just kept singing in the choir.
Good for her. And it wasn't easy for a woman to make up her mind on her own in those days.
Yeah, then today they split up, you know, and she took the young one with her, it was my brother's wife, and I don't know what year it was.
Oh. About the time you left for the city in 38 or before that, or?
Oh, you left in 44. 44.
Oh, 44, yes.
So it was before that. Mm-hmm. I believe Laura was about, young, maybe 4 or 5 years old. Or even younger. And she took him, I guess she ate a lot of use, you know. And Raymond passing away and not able to mend it anymore. And she believed the rest of her life he did not die. She kept thinking he walked through the door.
Well,
she always thought that. She always thought it was somebody else.
And did she move? Where did she move?
She moved to Edmonton. And believe it or not, she was a sales lady. She sold for Avon. I had a product, Dexter Shoes. I bought a pair from her, as a matter of fact, when I was going to school. And she became very successful selling, because she used to, in happier times, before Raymond, before the letter, the telegram, she'd hold a tea party. And Mother's down east, you see, a little different. She is Acadian, he said, and also spoke a little bit of Parisian French. So coming to Alberta, the French is not exactly the same. As a matter of fact, it's like night and day. But they got through that. So Mama held tea parties. And she brought all these little fancy stuff from Massachusetts in this old wagon, covered wagon, little teacups and china and all her possessions as a young girl. You know, it was the... Everybody did that. Even especially in Scotland and England, it was a religion. So she would have a tea party, and she end up selling to the ladies Avon or whatever she had product she was selling. Whatever was the other stuff? Do you remember, Rita? Any of the other stuff from besides shoes and Avon? Mm-hmm. There was something else. Anyway, she had another product she was selling. And there was not this party, but she would sell at some Avon. And there she'd make a few nickels or a dollar or something like that. And she'd save that up.
She'd become a national.
Huh?
She'd become a national.
Yeah, that's right.
Natural art, yeah.
Yeah.
She likes your life in the family.
She's wonderful, yeah.
So when she went to Edmonton and took your little brother Lloyd, the rest of you stayed here with your dad then, I guess? And he just managed on his own with the family. Right. The older sisters probably helped and did the housework.
Yes. And my young sister, Doris, she was a year younger than I. We were all 15 months apart, all of us, except Lloyd. We all were 15 or 13 months apart. And many times we were the same age. Because
same year.
Overlap.
Sure.
But I should be stuck with you're a monster, father.
It was. But I believe that Dad, Grandpa was the rock that held us together. Mm-hmm. And Father was not afraid of him. But he had a lot of respect for him. Mm-hmm. Why not? When he came here, he did not know what he was going to do, and Grandpa was just full of ideas.
He got him established, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So your father lived here then after your mother left, and he died in 1957.
Yes, he died. Well, he was terribly in pain. He had diabetes. I went to see him. Three of us. There's a picture here of the day we went to see him. And he was on crutches. He had diabetes. And he had cancer as well. There was no way he was going to live.
Mm-hmm.
So they were talking some kind of old times, and me, I was trying to feel like I was a part of it, you know? But it was hard to do. Because I was already abused too, you know. I had my lickings. I deserve some of them. But that one particular day when we all, four of us boys, men, now we're men, came to visit and probably say farewell, that was in 1955.
He died in 57.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they came to see him in that year, summer of 55.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing an apprenticeship in British Columbia at the time. And when we were talking, and he had made some hooch, you know, everybody made some white lightning, potatoes and raisins and all that.
Yeah.
Because everybody made their own liquor, I suppose. And he wanted us to have a drink of it, and I was a drinker. And I didn't want to, I only drank when I was in that little young age, when I was 10 or 11, 12. So I said, well, I can't drink that stuff. He said, what do you think it is? He says, I'll bet you nobody can tell what that is. I said, it's made from potatoes and raisins. And they call it white lightning where I come from. And it just happened. I had tasted it in Vancouver. The fence bar made it down in the basement. And I knew what it was. He said, see, there he is. I told you he was smart. And I thought to myself, that can't be him saying that about me. Yeah.
What did you do your apprenticeship in?
First of all, I did apprenticeship at ironwork, then carpentry. And also, when I was injured one time, I learned to weld, so I had a welder's ticket as well.
Well, you did your grandfather proud with all those things you could do. Yeah.
Yeah, he already knew that.
But I mean, he was a talented man too, and could do all these things, and so you just sort of followed along.
So I really majored in the ironwork at first, reinforcing ironwork. I was really good at it. I was really good at it. I was the first person out of Local 97 in Vancouver to do that. Before finishing a 2-year apprenticeship, I was a sub foreman on one of the jobs, a small portion, what used to call 2-bit pusher, which means 25 cents an hour. To see that this is done right or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was really not much but gridlock to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to say, I had to finish that apprenticeship, and I went on my own. And I went one day, I went everywhere, except home. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to go home, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you visited your mother probably more than your father.
Huh?
Did you visit your mother?
Oh, yes. I didn't carry on the conversation with her. There was nothing to talk about. Okay, we never did anything together. But there was one thing that really stands in my memory. In elementary school here in Athabasca, and it was grade 5 or 6 or 7, I'm not quite sure. And we had to write an essay on certain things, and the teacher appointed me to do an essay on denim, cloth. How do I can do that? So I knew a little bit about it. I read a little about it. So I go on my and I said to Mama, I got to write an essay on denim, but I'd like to have a piece, but I can't take it off my hands. I want to take a piece of denim and put my essay and show it on the page. That's when it's finished. So Mama says, I have an idea. So she writes to G.G. in Edmonton.
Oh, yeah.
For a sample of denim. Telling them that I need a sample because I'm doing this on denim. By G.W.G.
Your mother was clever.
Clever. And so in about a week and a half's time, what do you think come in the mail? This parcel addressed to me in care of my mom. And it's like this, you know, wrapped in paper, it was string on it, and GWG Edmonton. I said, what can that be? So I said, open it. And it's a little tear overall on this high. A replica of the regular carpenter's overalls.
Right.
And I was flabbergasted. And that was my key. Oh, I couldn't wait to get back to school. And I had ready to get my essay, and I read out my essay, you know, about that denim. And there's, I got a sample of denim. Sorry, my essay. And what did you bring? And I weighed up these books. And they hung them on the wall in the school. Yeah. Forever they were there. I never got them back. I just gave them to the school. And who knows where they are now. And I would like to know that. I reckon it. But that mom was so smart. She just... And that made my grade so high, you know.
Can we have... I had made the effort, or she had made the effort anyway. Can you remember very much about your Genereux grandparents, your mother's family? What was her dad's name?
His name was Joseph. And he was a hairstylist. And barber.
And he came from?
There. Massachusetts first. Oh, yes. Yeah, they came from Massachusetts first, yeah. Their family from before was from France. Mm-hmm. But they're from Massachusetts, where my mom was born.
And how did he decide to come out here?
And my mom was 8 years old at the time. They went as far. I think it was the... He wanted to go to come to Edmonton, mm-hmm. where there was a lot of work at the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was much to do in Massachusetts at the time. So he brought them here, but it was a failure.
Was it?
Yeah. His business did not last. And he decided to leave them, but I'll send for you, like, you know, when I get the money or something like that. In the meantime, they were living in Edmonton, in a place called Tent City. And there's still a part of that Tent City at the Fort Edmonton Park.
Okay.
One of those places. That was what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And from then they stayed there. And this is believed at the time that my dad and his brothers were handsome young Americanos, mm-hmm. see, and courted all the young innocent ladies, and so I guess he met mother and doctor and getting married, and then came to make family one after the other. But you know, it was good to be in a family that size until they started to leave.
Sure,
that hurt them. See. Mm-hmm.
But your grandfather, Genereux, is he one who left his life?
Yes.
He did? He here in Athabasca?
He left in Edmonton.
And he came up here by himself?
Yeah. He's looking for better life, and from there he disappeared.
Oh, and how did they get up here then?
I have no idea.
Because your dad met here, didn't they?
Yeah.
So somehow you're working a restaurant or something.
You know, bonding for people. Yeah. You know.
Do you know, have you any idea what became of your grandma, Genereux?
No. The trouble is, my brother Alex, who is one a little bit older than I, a year and a half or so, and he decided to search. At the time, the government would help you, and it was free. Genealogy was free for the asking. So Alex took advantage of that. He had photographs. You wouldn't believe. And whoever saw that I'll put that on Grandpa. Anyway. So one day, Alex said, I want you to see my collection. He had, I know he was doing this genealogy about Mom, Genereux, mm-hmm. her sisters, and Grandpa, Genereux. Alex knew everything about that. And he was only very young, too. Mm-hmm. So one day, he brought me to his apartment over in Beverly, and he had these photographs. He said, I'd like you to meet your grandmother. And he had a picture of this Indian woman, you know? And she had a band around her head and black hair, and she was really Indian. See? And Grandpa Genereux's family married the Huron in eastern Canada. There were no women to go around. Mm-hmm. So, and husbands were, so they married into the Indian families, and one married in the Apache.
When they were in the States.
Yeah. So Alex has his photographs, you know, and he says, oh, it's your grandmother, you know. And he's, oh, she was, well, you know what I mean, typical Indian lady. Her face is wrinkled, you know, and her hair is jet black like his. And now that you will throw back to the Indians. He looked like the Indian. He was dark, black, never had a gray hair. So he was red Indian. So we called him Coot. And I says, I think you got it mistaken. I think that's your grandmother, not mine. Yeah, from one of mother's sisters who married into the Indian culture. And from there, it progressed. So, and I don't
know what happened to these people, where they are, because there is no record of it. And Massachusetts is very jealous or protective of anything that goes from... I got letters from people or from the library in Lawrence, Massachusetts, from Boston. And I even went there when I was working down east to see if I could find any clue. But there was nothing. After they left, they lived, they had their address, Grandpa Henry and mother, like my grandma and my mother. Mm-hmm. They lived on an address in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Then they moved from there. And by American law, you have to let the constabulary know where you are, your next address.
Okay.
They want you to keep track of you,
mm-hmm.
where you live. And if you're an alien, it also the same way. But they lost track of them at when they left Lawrence. Hmm. Yes, this is Roy again. My brother Alex spent quite a few years searching our mother's side of genealogy and wanted to know where she found her roots.
Mm-hmm.
And he did find some very, very interesting stuff. Because we go back to the 1800s in eastern U.S. in Massachusetts. And mother's sisters married into the Indian culture. Even one married in the Apache. And my brother Alec, you know, he's quite a character. He has black hair, you know, and he is dark complexion. So we always called him Coot. It was our nickname for Indian.
Oh, okay.
That's kids. But it didn't bother him. Didn't care. He was alive. So one day he offered to show me his work that he spent so many years doing. And so I went to his place. He lived in Beverly, and he had a three-bedroom townhouse there in Beverly. And I went and, you want a beer? Nah, thank you. I want to see this work you have. And he had these wonderful photographs of all these Indian women and children. And so this is your grandmother, this one he showed me. And she had black hair and a band around her forehead, around her hair like that to hold it in place. And she was not too bad looking. But I could not believe it that she's my grandmother. So I said in jest, I said, oh, I believe it's your grandmother, not mine. Of course, it had to be mine as well, if it was his.
Yeah, that's right.
So he had a very beautiful collection of stories of people marrying into the... like one even married in as a Apache tribe and a Huron. And there was quite a few descendants later on, but not my mother, married in the American. So
on that side. Maybe that's why we cannot find where everybody is, because they didn't keep records.
That's right.
And they were not citizens.
They weren't registered in any way with...
Yeah, the Indian people, they were on reservations most of them, yeah. And they were not citizens of the USA. Mm-hmm. Not until a long time later.
Yeah.
So, wherever my grandmother went to, and Grandpa, I have no idea, on the generous side. Mm-hmm. But I have a good, I did look up my dad's side, starting with myself. And I traced the family, and you cannot believe the amount of people that branched out from this. Yeah. Yeah. There's one place that still pages of people, children, offspring. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of them.
Wow, and people had big families, and then they all had big families. It became a huge pyramid of people.
After one time, there was 153 descendants on my grandfather's side alone. Mm-hmm. At one time, and he wasn't very old then. He was only about 70. Yeah. And so we, I searched through the. I had help with the computer with the genealogy. The French one, did we
done? Yeah. The Norwest genealogy.
Yeah.
And White W.
Yeah. So they helped me too. And they traced back the Bergeron name from myself to my dad, his brothers, and so on on the men's male side to 1604 in Oney, France, which is in Brittany. And there is my grandfather Pierre was a commissioned pirate. This is true. I like telling stories, but this is one that I can hardly believe myself. But he was a pirate, as they say in French. I will send this to you.
Okay.
So you can see, I have the genealogy. I will send you the copy.
Uh-huh, right.
So I'd like to keep the original.
Oh, of course.
And of course, I will look up more artifacts if I can find something that you might like.
Sure.
And also some more photographs. I have one of Grandpa with his four horses on the farm, but you only see him from behind.
Oh, you don't have one of his face?
You don't see his face, no. So it could be anybody.
Right.
But on his farm, I doubt if it's anybody else.
Yeah, but you don't have a picture of him from the front then?
Well, I have lots of when he's older, not when he's 50 years old, though.
But maybe she would like to have the photo of your grandfather.
Yes, if you have one of your grandfather.
Well, but because you have some here. Yeah.
Oh. But you need to send that with his wife, with your grandma.
She has that.
Oh, on a piece of paper?
Yes.
Yeah. It's on one of
them. Don't you have the newspaper clipping of the... Here, the picture of Grandpa and Grandma in their 70th anniversary.
Oh, you said I could take a copy. It's a newspaper copy. Yeah.
Well, I don't have anything else.
You
myself.
Have nothing else.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can have Grandpa and Grandma a nice picture.
Yeah, I got them. I have them in. Oh yes, I do have a picture of Grandpa and Grandma in a nice pose, standing hand in hand like they did. You know, I'll send that to you.
Okay. Okay, that would be nice.
And I'm glad I was able to supply that photo of just a shop alone without, like on the south side, there was no park, no building yet. There was my mom's garden. Mm-hmm. And we also had gardens I never knew my directions in this town. I'd have to face...
If you go towards the river, that's north. If you're facing the river, it's north.
Okay.
I mean, so to the left is west. West of us, we had gardens there. Can I tell a little comical story?
Sure.
Well, my brother Frank at I, there was a man who here who was who came from China, and he was paying head tax.
Okay.
So he was never able to bring his wife and family here. And it's so sad, you know, and he was doing laundry here for everybody in Athabasca.
Do you remember his name?
Well, I just named him Charlie, his first name, I knew. But he was old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he used to use the iron that you clamp on, and you take it off and put it on the stove and get it warm, and you put the handle back
yes.
on. And
the sad irons.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had some kind of a contraption, they blow like a bug killer.
Okay.
And he would spread starch on the stuff like that,
oh.
and he'd iron like that. But he was a wonderful guy. I loved him. He was so great. He spoke pidgin English, like the thing is, this is why I learned to speak that too. I speak it very well, even now. And he said to me, he says, you go down to the Mr. Daniel's barn, the stable,
mm-hmm.
where he used to have the Mr. Daniel?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know the name.
And that's, anyway, I'm not sure of this Chinese band's name, but I'm sure a lot of people are still around that remember him. And he had a little place west of our main street, where fronting our business, about two blocks down. A little small, I believe it was still standing a few years ago when I was here. And it was his laundry room and laundry business, and he was quite successful. And one day he was trying to work to bring his family from China to Canada, but he could never pay off the head tax because they raised it up again from $50 to $500.
Oh, my.
See, and the $500 was out of the reach.
Right.
After that, $50 you might have been able to handle. So I ate with him. He had a little round table in a room next to his where he did his work, and two little chairs. And I used to sit with him, and I was about maybe 8 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, Lloyd, oh no, I can't say, I'm not supposed to speak that pidgin English,
no.
you know.
Uh-huh.
But he would say, I want you to go to the livery stable, because it's okay with Mr. Daniel, with the owner, because he didn't want those pigeons up there anyway. So Frank and I would climb up that ladder, and you can't believe what's up there. It's dark, and as soon as we get up there, they start flying.
So you sold the pigeons to this Chinese gentleman?
Yes, and we would have a sack full of them. But he wanted the ones that did not fly, because they were more tender. You know, so they'll, so you, the one that don't fly, just walk.
Okay.
So, Frank and I would just get covered with, you know what, it was terrible up there. It smelled awful. Finally, we'd get enough pigeons, we hope, to get 20 cents.
And what movie theater did you go to?
To Parker's Hall.
Up on top.
Yes.
And it was called, what was it called? Do you remember?
Well, we only call it Parker's.
Okay. Okay.
Because we were young, we didn't really pay attention.
Okay, and you watched a movie.
But we were seeing
up there.
Movies that I still watch.
Okay.
Yeah, they showed movies of the Bowery Boys and those guys, you know?
Do you remember the store across the street from your dad's business, the Royal Cafe?
Oh, yes.
And Mr. Charlie Ma Chung's?
Yes, very much, yeah.
Yeah, they lived upstairs in the apartments.
And did they rent rooms up there too?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was a successful man. He had he ran the restaurant by himself, I believe. Maybe he had a brother there. I'm not sure. But we like to hang around there.
Was he married? Did he have a wife there?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But he was very strict. Very about us hanging around that place. You know? If it's cold outside, we go in there. And we would get all these pigeons and go see the movies. That was great. Frank and I always had something going.
Something
cooking. And being 4 years older than I, I worked in the garden with him, you know. I hated the gardening. I couldn't stand it. But I had to do it. Everybody had to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Hoeing potatoes, I hated that. But I had to do that. So Frank decided that we would peel ties for Mr. McLeod. And the odd thing is that I already been there and done that. You know, like I say, I went at age 12 for a month burning the slashing, whatever you call it, and the first thing, like the first slab off of the carriage, off of the log. And now Frank gets the idea to peel ties. So he makes made up a tie horse, tie peeling horse. It's a tie with two rainbow spikes, four legs, and that's it. And two draw knives.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get 1 cent per tie.
Oh, it wasn't a lot, was it? It was a lot of work for 1 cent.
Yeah. The little square ones had only one little piece, but the tie with half of the bark still on it, it peeled for a long time. And my eyes just stopped over and I say, Frank, how much money have we got now? He split right down the middle with me. He didn't say, like, you're smaller, you don't do as much work.
Mm-hmm.
He did most of it, but he still gave me half the money.
Good brother.
Yeah, he was wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Then he joined up in the service. Then George, and then Arthur, and then my sister.
They were all in the service?
Yeah.
Which sister?
Norma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was a whack.
Okay.
Yeah. She looked really nice. She had long blonde hair. She tied in a ponytail. Yeah, she's a really wonderful girl. My favorite was Doris, my sister. We called her Gullah. All her life her name was Gullah, even till the day she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we were trying to teach Lloyd to talk, we tried to tell him to say Doris. All he could say was Gullah. So naturally, it became her name.
Right.
And it stuck. All those years. And every time I'd go skating, she'd be tagging along. And it was hockey time. So you're not playing hockey. Yeah, we're playing hockey today. And the two or three families would take us to the small towns around here to play hockey. We had uniforms and everything. Yeah, and Father McMahon was our coach.
Yeah, we have a picture actually with one of George Bergeron in a hockey uniform with a bunch of boys.
He called himself. He called himself. He called himself George Joliet Bergeron.
Oh, he gave himself the name of
Joliet, the hockey player, the Montreal Canadiens.
Oh.
Because they had Canadian uniform, yes?
Oh, okay.
Have you got a photo of that?
Of a group of boys, and he's one of them.
Where is it?
Well, I'll show it to you. I can
you
show
will?
You that. Sure, that's George. Yeah. Yeah. And then you were in the Boy Scouts.
I brought you a picture of the Boy Air Cadets.
Air Cadets. You were in the Air Cadets.
Oh, yes,
here.
Yeah.
Who was your squadron leader?
Mr. Bayless, the postmaster.
Okay.
And one of my school teachers was a lieutenant.
And that was?
He had eczema on his face. He was Clow, Bill Clow.
Oh, okay. Don't know the name, but...
And then we had... if we get the photograph, I can probably identify them.
The other boys.
The photograph here today.
Okay.
Well, at one time when... way back when Dad was thinking of selling, my brother Frank was a master carpenter, like Arthur. Arthur could put two pieces of wood together, dare you to find the joint. They were master carpenters. And we would like to buy the business and keep it running, because we were young, you see. Mm-hmm. So we went to Dad and asked him. This was before it was impossible to buy it, because the tax wasn't that much. We could have raised it easily from the bank and paid it off. Or the government would take a few dollars at a time, as long as they got it. They didn't care. So he said, I never knew you were interested in this. That's why we never talked about it. That's why we never spoke. And Frank, being the spokesman, the one that could really handle the business, I would run the business. Frank would be the mechanic, do everything. Wonderful carpenter. Master carpenter. We had plans to buy it all. But if it's like you said, Dad said, if he had known that, he would have given the damn thing to us. Well, why didn't he give this long, long time ago? And relax and have some fun. Instead of getting sick. Mm-hmm. So, who knows whose mistake that was. But it could have been a lot different. I may not be sitting here talking to you. I may be sitting talking to my grandchildren up there in a hill somewhere on a rocking chair, and they're downtown running this business.
Right.
And it's so big, it's covered the whole block.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.